Welcome to The Wellness Way with Barbara and Michael O'Neill. Before we start today's episode, I'd like to introduce you to our sponsor, Vivo Barefoot. Did you know the human foot is an evolutionary masterpiece? 26 bones for natural stability, over 100 muscles, tendons and ligaments for natural strength. Embrace your human nature and reconnect to the natural world. We know about Big Pharma, we know about big farming, but did you know about Big Shoe, who put fashion before fitness and wealth before well-being? The unnatural solutions that we have created are not working. There is a better way to live. It's time to stand together, barefoot on one earth, roaring in the face of normality and embracing our human nature. We are nature. Nature is us. Get 15% off your first Vivo Barefoot order using the code PJL15. If you'd like to know more about this, please go and check out my podcast episode with seventh generation cobbler, Galahad Clark, CEO of Vivo Barefoot. Thank you, Vivo Barefoot. Enjoy the rest of the show. Welcome to The Wellness Way with me, Philly J. Lay. A layperson's guide to your natural health systems, your very own NHS. Hello, lovely people, and welcome to The Wellness Way. And if you have an interest in natural health, and I presume you do, or you wouldn't be following this show, today's guest will need no introduction. She is more viral than COVID, and most probably more dangerous to the establishment than COVID ever was. Behind every good man is a good woman, but the reverse is also true. And so today, I'm not going to introduce you to one, but to two O'Neills. Welcome to Barbara and Michael O'Neill. Thank you so much for joining me today on the show. Thank you.
It's good to be here.
It's a pleasure.
Oh, right. Where do we begin this one? I'd like to take you back, Barbara, to the beginning, because I've listened to you talk. I mean, you're always on my feed. I've learned so many things from you, from the benefits of castor oil and Celtic salt. Yeah, I mean, there's so much stuff and everybody knows your work. But could you take us back right to the beginning and your childhood and coming into being a carer for your mother and how that took you on this journey?
Well, I was always a very quiet child and a very shy child. There's my brother, me, and then three younger sisters. And my younger sisters were certainly a lot louder and more social than I. I was always very happy to be in the background. But I've always had a love to help people. I used to look after my little baby sister. And when my mum got sick, then I certainly helped her with her sickness. In fact, to the point that I had been a hairdresser, I went into psychiatric nursing because I was always interested in the mental aspect, and I quite liked the nursing bit. And so I was 3.5 years in the nursing, psychiatric nursing, nearly 4 years. But in that time, I got into a little bit of the drinking and the drugging lifestyle on the weekends.
As you do in the 60s.
And then another male nurse and I fell in love and went to a rainforest and had our children, home births and sleeping with babies and breastfeeding them for years and growing veggies, all of that sort of stuff. Now, in about this time, it was probably with my first child, she had an earache. And over 6 weeks and four courses of antibiotics, I was very frustrated because the earache kept coming back. Now, this experience, I think, is one of the things that really was a catalyst for me in changing my direction. I felt the frustration of not knowing what to do, the frustration of not wanting to put my child in danger, but the only option was drugs. And the drugs weren't doing it.
and this is Emma, isn't it?
Yeah.
And Emma had quite a lot of courses of antibiotics at that
yes.
time. And did you know the dangers of antibiotics then, or was it just a gut mother's instinct?
I think it was a gut mother's instinct. And I was really looking at back to nature lifestyle. That was our slogan, back to nature. And drugs weren't nature. So no. I was a very challenging time for me.
And over this period of time, you started experimenting, and you talk about Emma's earache and how you healed that yourself, because the antibiotics, we know that, that drugs are a sticking plaster, that Western medicine is a sticking plaster, and so you discovered something that sorted out the earache. Would you like to share that with us?
Well, actually, with this, I said to the doctor, will my daughter be on this for the rest of her life, as he's writing the fifth script for antibiotics. And he sent me to an ear, nose and throat specialist who looked in her ears, looked in her mouth, said she's teething, and gave her these drops to keep her eustachian tubes clear. And that was it. So it was actually 2 years later with my next child who got an earache. I didn't go to the doctor. And I did not go to my family because I got pressure. You must do something about the ears. There was a little old lady living next door and I went to her. I said, what did your mother do when you had an earache? I'm 25, she's 85. And she told me about the cooked onion. So I ran home, I cooked the onion. James slept for 2 hours. And he's 45 now and he's never had another earache. So I was impressed.
Yeah, no, it's very impressive. So for anybody that doesn't know the cooked onion hack, could you please explain it to us? I'd like to thank today's sponsors of the Wellness Way podcast, London Nootropics. London Nootropics adaptogenic coffee blends are designed to help you stay balanced and elevate your day. They give you all the benefits of regular coffee, but they minimize the side effects such as the jitters, anxiety, and that well-known crash. Lovingly made with the highest quality medicinal mushroom extracts and other adaptogens. Each blend is designed for a specific purpose. Flow for mental clarity and focus, Zen to alleviate stress and anxiety, and Mojo for that natural boost. You can read more about their blends and the adaptogens they contain on their website, londonnootropics.com. And if you'd like to learn more about their blends and their astonishing journey, why don't you go and check out our podcast episode together where you can learn more about the boys from London Nootropics. And don't forget to use my exclusive discount, Philly20, for your 20% off. Cheers, London Nootropics. Enjoy the rest of the show.
Well, I didn't really know much. I just thought I'll steam it with the skin on. I cut it in half, keeping the ends intact, wrapped it in a cloth, and the open cut bit I put on his ear, of course, with a few layers of cloth over. And I knew I had to keep that warm. You know, there is some common sense there. Even though I'd just been told an onion, I sort of realised it had to be kept warm. So he fell asleep. He was breastfed. And I just laid him on the onion on a folded up towel, which I knew would keep it warm. And he slept for 2 hours. And when he woke up, he was happy there was no evidence. So I went and got a little book with a index in it, and that was my natural remedy book. And I put my first...
That was 1980. That is
and
amazing.
I put my first natural remedy in there, cooked onion poultice for ears.
Well, have you still got that book of all your remedies?
Somewhere.
Are you ever going to publish that, Barbara?
Well... It sort of expanded.
As these things do. So I now want to bring Michael in. Michael, thank you so much for being here. Your husband, who has stood by you from the beginning of this. And your journey, Michael, started before 2020. And you were telling me earlier about something that I didn't know that had happened in Australia back in 2016. You know, from 2020 onwards, I've stood outside the Australian embassy in London in the demonstrations, in the protests. And I know that you're not a stranger to those demonstrations and protests, Michael. So can you please just tell our audience what happened in Australia in 2016?
Yes, well, actually, 2015, they brought in a ruling, or it was an edict that was called the No Jab, No Pay, because Australian families, once upon a time, they used to get be able to claim their children on their tax. So the government says, no, you don't claim your children on your tax or your wife anymore. What we do, you get taxed at the full rate, and then we for each child, they return it in a payment system. So now, instead of getting a proper tax deduction, we get a payment, a family payments. Well, what they did, they said that if you don't get vaccinate your children, then you don't get your payments. So these are your rightful payments. These is money that you as a taxpayer own. It's put into the tax bank and then you're to get it back. And they said no. So I saw that as incredibly unjust. And also it really targeted poor people because they were the people who needed these funds the most. They also said the children were not allowed to go to daycare and to the lower grades of school because they were a danger to the other children. I saw that was wrong on so many levels that I approached all the political parties at the time. I said, you know, what are we going to do about this? Everyone was sitting on their hands. They said, well, we can't muck around with childhood vaccinations, Michael. This is very serious. And I said, no, it's not. You know, they are fraught with danger. And what about a parent's free choice to be able to do this? And we're penalising parents, taking away their legitimate money to force them into a medical procedure that they don't agree with. So I then decided, because the political parties wouldn't do it, I started a political party in 2016. And it grew and grew. And of course, I used to travel around the countryside speaking, and I used to tell people back in 2017, 18 and 90, I said, you think it's about the children? It's only a matter of time they will come after you. You let this go in the children, they're wanting to be jab you. People thought I was an extremist and a conspiracy theorist, but that theory became a reality in 2021 and late 20, where they absolutely did what we said they would do. They came after every single person pretty much on the planet.
Sorry to interrupt this podcast. The Wellness Way has got a brand new interactive ebook out. I've created a beginner's guide to your natural health systems to help you navigate through the jungle of natural health. A banquet of knowledge wrapped up in a simple ebook, featuring some of my top guests from the podcast. As an added bonus, I've even thrown in my meditation album, The Wellness Awakening, From Past Lives to Passing. Head over to my webpage, phillyjlay.com, to grab your copy now. And while you're there, why don't you sign up for my newsletter? And don't forget to like, subscribe, and share this podcast so we can continue to get this information out. Remember, the doctor of your future is you. So I'm going to come back to these protests in 2020. And you said the police were heavy-handed. You know, we've talked about that. And I love Barbara yesterday when you were talking. You were saying this man with white hair and the police are holding you down. What happened on one of those protests?
I was invited to protest at the Sydney Olympic Stadium, one of our biggest stadiums there. When we arrived there, there was hundreds of police. There was the riot squad. There were police on horses. It was a very dark time. The police were mingling the crowd. And when they saw me, they said, Mr. O'Neill, if you speak today, because they would have had pre-news that I was a speaker, we will have to arrest you. And of course, I laughed. I said, oh, really? Yeah, that's going to be fun, guys. Let's see how that goes. And they were all very serious and wearing their masks, and They wandered off. They said, well, we're warning you now. So so they surrounded about 2,000 people were protesting. There was probably about 300 odd, 350 police. So when it came time, I thought, well, that's it. I walked out onto a little knoll and I stood, and then I started to speak to the crowd. People started to listen to me. And then the police started running. They all ran towards me. Then they surrounded me and they got in my face very close. They said, please stop speaking or we will arrest you. I said, I haven't quite finished yet. And I kept talking. And so they said, okay, hereby, we've got you. So they grabbed me. They were all around me. The crowd started to boo, leave him alone. They started to drag me off, one on each arm. And as I was walking out with the crowd all saying, let him alone, leave him alone, I noticed that their arms had loosened. So I jumped out of their grip and spun around, turned around and said, hey. And they went to grab me again. And then I thought, I'm having a bit of fun here. So I took off and ran. And I was literally running past the police, jumping over them. They were all encumbered with lots of guns. And some had fully automatic guns. and, you know, canisters of, you know, whatever they carry on their body, which seems to be a terrible lot. Anyway, I was able to run around through the Kathy Freedom Save. Kathy Freeman is one of our star athletes who won gold at the Olympics, and they named the park after her. And, of course, I had my hands out running in a rocky position, you know, with the champion. I could have got away, but I decided to run back around into where the police are, and eventually they all tackled me down, yes. And so it was quite a moment. They were hurting me, girls and young males, young females. I told them that they were very disrespectful, had to stop hurting me. They did release their grip. At the same time, a group of bikers who had tattoos all over their face came running over. They said to the, they yelled out to me, they said, "Hey, old man, are they hurting you?" And I said, "A little bit." And they said, "Leave him alone or we'll hurt you." So the police all then left me alone. And
God's angels.
Yeah.
And they walked out, and then I was being charged. They sat here and they said, "We're going to stay here to make sure you're okay." So thanks, guys.
And how lovely.
So all these very, you know, rough sort of guys were there because they believed in, they could see something was terribly wrong, you know, the impingement on their freedom. And I was fined. I took it to court. I was found to be guilty. I took it to the higher court. And we prepared our case, and I represented myself, and we had it acquitted and thrown out.
Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
But wasn't it on the news that
night? It was on the news, yes. It was on the news. And I just thought the whole thing was so ridiculous that I was going to make a bit light of it. In fact, when I was in court and they played it all up on the screen in the court, I started to chuckle. And the judge looked down and he said, "Mr. O'Neill, do you find this funny?" I said, "Actually, Your Honour, I do find it quite funny."
This period in history, we haven't half had a laugh, even, you know, that it's been very tough. But my goodness, I never thought people like us would be doing the things that we're doing.
No criminal record. I've always been, other than maybe a little bit of a misspent youth, but generally in my life, I've been a businessman. I'm a justice of the peace. I've been the president of tourism. Chamber of Commerce. I've been all respectable positions, always worked for the good of our community. And here I was now a criminal ready to be tackled and hurt by young police officers. How did that come? That's pure, that's a Nazi-like situation that we found ourselves in. And it's not acceptable for any free nation that we should be there. Not acceptable by any stretch of the imagination.
So can you tell me how you both met?
Well, I'd like to talk to that. Barbara was a single mother and I was a single father. I had two children. She had six children. And I decided that I'd like to find the perfect wife. And I'd already, as being married once, I developed a scientific formula that would find me the perfect wife. And I worked on this for nearly 1 year. And so every eligible female that I met, I put into this formula, and it was all based on some points value. And there was one name that scored higher than everybody else I knew, and it was Barbara. It was Barbara. She just, and I thought, I'm going to be true to my formula because this would give a person that would be suited to me in all ways and that I would be able to be suited to her. And after doing this for a long time, and I only talked to my children about it, and everyone, I told no one else about it, they were all agreeing that Barbara would be, they'd be very happy to have Barbara as their stepmother. And so I eventually went and saw Barbara. I told her.
Sorry, I've just got to ask a question. You had met Barbara before?
I had met Barbara, yes, yes. We were both single parents who homeschooled our children. So through mutual functions where we used to take our children with other homeschooling parents, we got to know each other. And also two of Barbara's daughters actually worked for me. I was their boss. But Barbara lived down the road and she was just a busy little mum down there. But when I put it in scientifically, who would be the most compatible for me, she always came up as the best. And I thought, this is a person we will be solid. And we're being married, you know, 26 years. And
so you have to talk about when you proposed.
Oh, well, I I went to Barbara's house and I said, I'd like to talk to you about something this particular afternoon. And so she sat down. I told you you should sit down. Did you sit down, darling?
No, I decided to stand.
She decided to stand. I didn't know what was coming. And I said, look, I've been thinking about things and I think you and I should get married.
That was it.
I said, you keep a clean house, you cook good meals, your children are in order, you don't seem to waste money. And I went through all these very functional things. And Barbara looked at me and she said, well, I think when two people should get married, they should love each other. She said, do you love me? And I said, well, I certainly love your character and I have an attraction to you. I've never really let myself go any further thinking about that, but I think the core foundation and principle that it will make us a happy couple and that love will come are there. So what do you think? And Barbara said...
What did you say, Barbara?
I said, yes, I will.
Oh, I want that formula, Michael. Can you just give me the formula, okay, just so that I can start running it through?
You know, it's... I actually used to have it on paper and give it to, I tell that story sometimes to our guests at our health retreat and I would give it to them. And but you have to be very faithful and true to it because I never dated. I never showed. I did it purely on paper. And Barbara shone above them all.
Oh, that is so lovely. Yes. Thank you for sharing that with us. When 2020 hit, I'll ask you first, Barbara, because I was already kind of getting off grid and working out my own process of what I knew one day would happen, that false vaccinations would come in for people. So when 2020 hit, I knew that that was it. And it happened much quicker than I thought it would do. I thought we maybe had another 5-10 years. What was your initial reaction at 2020?
Well, I was in Colorado, and I remember my family were all saying, Barbara, you've got to get out of there. You've got to get out of there. They're starting to close everything down. And it wasn't until I got to Atlanta Airport and there was no one there. Now, if you know Atlanta Airport,
I don't.
It's one of the busiest airports. And there was no one there, and I thought, this thing's real. Because at first I thought, oh, surely not. It sounds like they're all overreacting a little bit, but whew, they weren't. And
but the reaction was real. People embraced the lie.
People embraced it, and I got the last plane out of Dallas.
Gosh.
In 31st of March 2020, I was running a retreat in Colorado and had to cut that a little short. And I got into Australia, and when I got into Australia, there were all these people with masks and you know, looked like they're about to walk on outer space, and it was, I'd never seen anything like it. And then I got in at 9 o'clock, and at midnight, they passed the law, you had to go into quarantine. So my husband said to me, quick, get a little hotel here, get on the first train in the morning and get out of there. And early in the morning, as I'm on a taxi getting to the train to get out of there, because usually I'd get a flight, but the flights were all over the place, the taxi driver could hardly drive because there was buses. Now, this is 6 o'clock in the morning, buses everywhere. I said, what is this? He said, it's to take all the people as they come off their flights. And there were military there.
I find this so shocking. I mean, I didn't realise what had happened previously in Australia, but we saw Australia fall and come under a rule that I never thought was imaginable. And, you know, I've spoken before about I flew to Berlin in 2020, October 2020, to go on a demonstration. I knew there was a demonstration happening on the 10th of the 10th, got on a plane, didn't know where I was going. And I couldn't find a demonstration. And after about 4 hours, I sat on the streets and I just wept and just kind of thought, what am I doing? This mad middle-aged woman doesn't even speak the language. And then I saw the police vans coming up and I thought, I'm here. You know, the universe, God has brought me to where I need to be today. And I filmed for 2.5 hours as the people went past. And that was the time, I believe, as I know you do, that gratitude and forgiveness are two of the keys to health and happiness. And I was able to forgive Germany because my father had been a pilot in World War II. because I saw what propaganda could do for the first time in my life, and then show gratitude that a million people were on the street. And we were a little bit behind in London. It took us a year before we got a million of us on the streets, but we did. There was this whole propaganda that people fell for. And What did both of you do as a couple? Were you tempted to speak politically to anybody? Was anybody going to listen to you, Michael?
Well, of course, I never stopped speaking through it. I decided to disregard the narrative. I would not comply. I refused to comply with something that was just a lie and was utter madness. It created a few problems. We tried to run our business, but people didn't come. Barbara and I own a health retreat in Australia called Misty Mountain Health Retreat. It was, I was on the street all the time. We were protests. Sometimes they were very small. Sometimes the police were very heavy-handed. I experienced, being pushed, shoved, rammed into the ground. It was truly surreal our police, who were there to protect us, there to solve crime and, offences against the public, were now turned on our people and were treating us as if we were criminals, dangers to society, and using the most heavy-handed tactics. It was a bizarre time to be alive.
It was. I was on the end of a baton more than once in Hyde Park around Speaker's Corner. And I thought, Speaker's Corner was the last bastion of free speech and that we'd get away with it there. But there was nowhere safe, which really scared me. But we've come a long way in 3 years. And we know that the vaccinations didn't work. We know that there have been millions of adverse side effects. And people are talking now about a new variant coming in. And I'm just wondering how, and I don't want to be rude about people, but it is gullible. And it's, the propaganda is so great that it's very hard to stand up. But how gullible people are going to be the next time round. And, we've all been called granny killers. I'm sure, I have, and I'm sure you have. So I want to talk a bit about vaccines further. And I know that, and we're going to come back to why you left Australia, but I'd like to talk a little bit about the Amish community. Barbara, if you could maybe talk about the Amish community and vaccination.
Well, our daughter Emma, she lives in Wisconsin, near the little town of Baldwin, and there are many Amish around, and so she knows quite a few Amish and she helps them. And it was in late 2020 that one of the children died in a river. He drowned. He was 12, and the ambulance came, and on his death certificate they said died of COVID, and the parents were so upset. And they said, he drowned. And they said, oh, we tested him for COVID and wow, he was positive. This was the Amish community. And what I'm sure you would like to hear me more talk about is the fact that they don't get autism. Mm. Now, it's not 100% free, but it's about 99% free, because it is true that autism is due to damage to the nerve cell, and chemicals can do that, but the number one contributing factor is the vaccine. And the Amish do not vaccinate their children. And so the epilepsy, the autism, it's virtually non-existent.
And for this, we're talking about the childhood vaccine schedule.
The childhood vaccinations.
Nothing that's come in since then, but just... And that's increased hugely. I mean, I had vaccinations when I was a child, and I think I had about five, but now the schedule is up into the 80s, and the body, and I've spoken before on the show about autism and the vaccine schedule. So could you give us some statistics on what were the statistics for autism and what they are today?
Well, Dr. Peter McCulloch said this 2 weeks ago, I think it was, and I was also talking to an Irish doctor, and she gave me the same figures. Today, they're saying 1 in 36. but it was about 70 years ago. It was one in 10,000.
10,000, yeah.
So that's something that you've got to look at, because the question is that these things don't just happen.
No, and many doctors say it's because we can diagnose it better.
In fact, what really opened my eyes was Dr. Bruce Fyfe's book, Stop Autism Now. Now, he's a medical journalist that was just looking at the issue of autism, and everywhere he looked, he came to the same conclusion. It was the vaccines. So in his book, Stop Autism Now, I think the first three chapters, he's just looking at the vaccinations, and he goes further. He looks at how they're made. He looks at what's in them. He even goes so far as to look at how they're researched, and he discovered that the researchers are on the pharmaceutical company payroll.
Yes.
So what are you going to get there?
It is, and you know, I had Dr. Aseem Malhotra on here talking about how they mark their own homework. And don't we all wish we could mark our own homework? But I'm going to talk about the Amish again, because I remember watching a docuseries called The Truth About Vaccines. And in the Amish community, somebody had been interviewed because they had their first two cases of autism. And the parents of these children came before the elders of the church, and they were kind of talking about it and saying, we don't understand. And throughout this conversation, it became apparent that the parents had panicked and had taken their children out of the community and had them vaccinated. And these were the first two children on record in the Amish community. And we don't have studies, as you said. You know, there are no studies on this. And when any doctors like Dr. Andrew Wakefield have stood up and asked for studies, you know, and he didn't say they cause, you know, autism. He said, my research proves that I think we need to do proper full study research. And for that, he got shut down.
Yes,
that's right. In fact, he said, with his own words, he said, I'm not against vaccinations. That's what he said. Mm. But he said, but we've got to look at something. There is a problem.
There is a problem. And
there's a doctor in Australia, Dr. Kevin Coleman. At one point, he was the head of vaccination of children in all Western New South Wales. And he's become a very good friend of ours. And he started to observe in the communities where they were vaccinating, that there was some problems with children. So he just raised, he said, look, I think we need to look at this. And they told him to be quiet. He said, well, I'm a doctor, foremost. I think we need to look at this. They warned him again, and he's been struck off. They said that he was having bouts of insanity.
Psychosis.
And that was when he, at any time that he said, there's a problem, we've got to look at it. And he often said, I'm not against the vaccine at that time. He's moved a little further along as time has gone on. But at that time, he said, not at all. He said, this is my job. But he just tried to just even have a little look, and they couldn't suffer that to be. So it's quite unique. If a Toyota car has an airbag give trouble out of, you know, 100,000 cars and have two airbags that were faulty, they will recall every car in that 100,000 and replace them and have an investigation, and people will be held account who was deemed to be developed that. And that's how industry works, and all the mechanisms to create safety are in our society on pretty much every product except vaccines.
Except vaccines, and they have a complete exemption, the pharmaceutical companies, so that nobody
That's correct. And they are only a commercial product. They are a commercial product that are designed, manufactured, marketed for profit. And if we ever think any otherwise, then I've realised that it's quite delusional, because they hide under a cover it's for the greater good of our children, but it's not. It's just a commercial product that's marketed and with all the marketing that goes with it to make profit.
So I want to come back now to Misty Mountains and your retreat, where, Barbara, you have helped thousands of people around the world, and not just at Misty Mountains, but, you know, your, as I said, your clips go viral on social media. My TikTok feed is just Barbara O'Neill now, and people all around the world share your work. But this got you in hot water, and something happened recently, and you've had to leave Australia. Could you tell us about that, please?
Well, it really, we believe, has a lot to do with Michael's political party. It was in early 2019, I was asked to give a short lecture on the laws of health, which I did at one of Michael's rallies. And then it was 2 days later that the pro-vax people put up on their website, "We have to take this woman down. Are there any volunteers?" Three people came forward. They'd gone through everything I'd ever said, and they'd found something that they believed they could use. One was putting a piece of apple in a cloth bag for a little baby to suck on. They said the baby could choke on the cloth bag. And another one was goat's milk. It could be potentially lethal. Do you know, Michael and I laughed. We thought, this is a joke. So I gave answers to their claims. But I realised now they wanted scientific studies.
Mm.
And because they didn't believe my answers were enough, they put me under investigation. When you're under investigation, you're not allowed to. It's as if you have a ban. So I was unable to work. I was unable to give advice. I was unable to lecture. And then in July 2019, they officially banned me. Life ban. I am forbidden to speak in Australia on health. I'm forbidden to give any health advice, or $10,000 fine and 10 years in prison. So that was 2019. So in 2020, when the lockdown happened and we were locked down on our beautiful farm, 450 acres, I became the gardener. We couldn't run retreats. And I started doing Zooms. I did Zooms all over the world, Zooms to Africa, Zooms to quite a few in America, England. Sometimes I'd do a series. And then in 2021, about February, I got an email from the Healthcare Complaints Commission saying, "We notice you're doing Zooms. This is a violation of your prohibition order. Final warning or 3 years jail." I wasn't even speaking to anyone in Australia. That's why we thought I would be fine.
Yeah.
And we're on a mountaintop. And so Michael said, "We've got to get you out of here." And so 2021, I was away 9 months lecturing overseas. You see, Michael said to me, "Well, Barbara, you've got a choice here. You can retire and your retirement age, or you can lecture overseas." And I said to Michael, "I feel fantastic. I don't feel ready to give up, or, you know, to cease my work. I've never had so much knowledge or experience in my brain. I believe it would be wrong to stop. I'll go overseas." And so that's what happened.
And you sat in front of a committee. You were called in front of a committee. And, Michael, you tried to hire some lawyers, didn't you, for Barbara?
I contacted all the best people, and I eventually came to one particular company that was supposedly the best in this area. I talked to their senior guy. I gave him the whole case, sent him everything that you could possibly. So he, yes. Oh, this is, we'll have a case. We turned up for the hearing. A young lawyer was there. She said he couldn't make it. "I'm here to represent you." She said, "Can you tell me a little bit about it? We were due in 15 minutes. She says, "I'm not sure what the case is." So we realised that we have just spent all this money. We've spent all this time. We've given all the documentation to their lead lawyer. He didn't come. He just sent along a junior who knew nothing. So she just walked in and sat. And that cost us, just for that day, for her to sit in there, cost us $5,000. So that was so much for the legal profession helping us. I felt they were scared to help us. Because I've since found out that most law firms in Australia do work for the government, and they're terrified to jeopardise their government contracts by taking on unpopular
topics.
Yes, and going up against the Healthcare Complaints Commission. When we went in there, of course, we sat in the hearing. There was four people. There was not a medical person. There were two investigators and two lawyers. And basically they went through the entire thing. They were very rude. They didn't tell the truth. In many cases, they tried to trick Barbara and trick us into saying things. It was very hard on Barbara. It was very annoying for me. She cried a number of times because they were quite cruel, how the way they twisted what she was saying. And, you know, Barbara doesn't lie. And so they were trying to infer that she was a liar, and she found that very difficult. And but anyway, when we left, I spoke to the young lawyer. I said, well, how did that go? And she said, oh, no, they had nothing on you. She said, I was waiting for them just to bring out the big kabam moment, where the gotcha moments, they've got you, you said this. There was nothing there. And I said, oh, that's great. She said, yes. I said, so they'll just throw everything out. She said, oh, no, they're going to give her a permanent prohibition order. But that's good. She said, because they're not going to fine her, send her to jail, or take her to court. There's nothing there to do it. So they'll just give her a permanent prohibition order. And, of course, that registered with me as that just reeked of communist-style mm-hmm. courts, where if you were not guilty, you were still charged, but you got a lesser sentence. So there's no rule of law followed in these great bureaucratic the Healthcare Complaints Commission of New South Wales, because that's the state you rely on, is basically an ideology enforcer, not a health complaints. We even challenged them. I said, could you produce one complaint from anyone that's ever treated her, but just one? They were embarrassed. Said, we don't have to have one.
Well, they obviously couldn't get one, but they threw a couple of things at you that I know of, but please enlighten me to more. So one, you have a protocol, Barbara, that helps with your cancer patients at Misty Mountains. So that was one of the things, because we know about the Cancer Act and how, you know, in the 30s it came in that you could not treat cancer with anything apart from chemotherapy. And you have a protocol for your patients that includes something. Now, this isn't the whole protocol. And, you know, all of this in natural health is about finding the balance within the body. And, you know, Dr. Otto Warburg said when he won the Nobel Peace Prize, you know, that nothing, including cancer, can grow in an alkaline body. So can you tell us your protocol that, or some of the protocols that you do, but the one that they found very upsetting for this?
Well, the one they found very upsetting was the sodium bicarbonate wraps, which a Canadian doctor had given to me. And when I was in Invercargill a few years after that, I was doing a series of meeting for an Indian doctor, and he said, would you please demonstrate it? And it's quite an involved treatment, so I don't usually. And his wife, she was a nursing lecturer, and his 15-year-old son would be the patient, so to speak. So I did, which I have never done before because it's so involved. And he filmed it and then put it up on YouTube, unbeknownst to me. And about 6 months later, a guest said, oh, we're doing the sodium bicarbonate wraps. I said, how do you know how to do them? They said, it's up on YouTube. I said, oh, is it? And I actually said that at the HCCC in questioning. I said, they said, why did you put that up on YouTube? And I said, I didn't. I said, I didn't even know it was up there. I didn't put it there, and it is not a cancer cure. Do you know they can find not one sentence where I say that? And I knew that frustrated them. In fact, I remember near the end I thought, they can't find anything because I don't believe I can heal anyone. And I know the sodium bicarbonate wraps can't heal anyone, but it's exactly what you said. It's part of a protocol, and it's giving the body the conditions so that cancer can't thrive. That's all it is. And some people have conquered cancer without even doing the sodium bicarbonate wraps. Mm. It's part of the protocol. And people that we've seen turn around from cancer, they've come to our retreat and done them for a week. So it's not actually just them. It's what they do when they go home. You're absolutely right. It's creating a more alkaline environment in the body, which food does. And in my book, Self Heal by Design, I have a chapter on the sodium bicarbonate balance in the body. So you can't do the wraps and then go and eat junk. You know, it's not a it's a whole package.
It is, and it's really important to find the balance of what you can actually fit into your life, because, you know, we all know, well, we don't all know, but, you know, there are a lot of us out there that are self-healers and that have had the privilege to be able to heal ourselves. And it is a privilege, I believe, and it is a journey that you go on. But you can't do everything, and you can't do everything every day, and you just have to find the things that you can make habits and put into your life, I think. Would you agree with that, Barbara?
Absolutely. In fact, one of my favourite emails is a 38-year-old girl emailed me from Germany, I think. She said, 1 year ago, I saw your lectures, I got your book, I implemented everything you said. She said, I've just been to the doctor and I'm cancer-free. She had breast cancer. Wow. You see, my favourite email. You know why it's my favourite email? Because I didn't have any contact with the girl. She got the information, she did it, she got the results, because it's the body. And it's the body only that has the inbuilt ability to heal itself. And I'm sure that's what frustrated the HCCC, is they couldn't find anything where I say I can heal or this can heal, because it's the body when it's given the right condition.
Absolutely. And I know that you're a deeply religious woman, Barbara. And I believe that our DNA, you know, and you've spoken about it, and Dr. Bruce Lipton speaks about it, you know, is the gun and we're the trigger. And so this is coming back to terrain and germ theory. And we have these extraordinary bodies and this gift that God has given us. And I know that I've heard a lecture by Greg Braden where he talks about, in our DNA it is written God within us, and we are part of God, you know. And I hope you don't find that irreverent.
Not at all. He created us.
Yeah. And, you know, I've been challenged by God at some points in my life. And at times I've called him the universe, or her the universe, or source, or field. But we know that we have this amazing ability to heal if you get the conditions right. So I want to come back to the hearing. What was the next thing that they brought up?
Oh, I can remember. What was next?
Well, there was a number of things. There was the goat's milk, of course, and we challenged them on the goat's milk, and we said, could you produce one study that, because we're not aware of any fatalities from goat's milk, and they got embarrassed. They said, well, while there is no recorded deaths of goat's milk, we feel it's potentially fatal.
And were you saying raw goat's milk or just...
We were saying goat's milk from healthy sources.
Well, what I realise now, what they caught me on, I always say, you know, you can buy goat's milk formula. And we have, I think, 3 grandchildren who were raised on the goat's milk formula. It was a meeting where someone asked me a question, what about raw goat's milk? And I said, as long as it's a healthy goat and clean. And that's what they grabbed me on.
Okay. Yes, because that, again, is a fine line with health. And I want to go a little bit further on this, Barbara, because I've heard you talk about cow's milk. And I've heard you say that if a baby cow was given cow's milk, it would die.
Well, if
the supermarket milk.
The supermarket.
Yes.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yeah, the
yes.
supermarket milk. And a farmer said to me one day, if a cow dies in calf birth, and that calf does not get the mother's colostrum from the cow, he said, we might as well put that calf down. So I also, and I know where I spoke in Clonmel, there were some people there who love their raw dairy and they love their organic meat. And I said, well, if it's in your heritage, and I know our naturopath at Misty Mountain, he always asks people their heritage. So I'm a 5th-generation Australian, Scottish descent. I can't handle milk. And that's why I had a bronchitis every year as a child. And we had to drink milk at school, and it made me feel ill. But I do recognise that there are some people that dairy's been in their family for generations. They've got the enzymes to break it down. I do not. But in the next breath, God made milk in mammals for babies. People say, well, what milk do you drink? I say, I'm weaned, I eat food.
Oh, I love that.
So, I am the one that God put in charge of my body. If someone says to me, well, my family have raw milk and we kill our own cows and we're doing well, I say, good on you. It's your choice. But for myself, Michael and I, we go very well on a plant-based diet and we still run up and down hills and our brains still work, whereas there are some that claim you must have some meat. I just say, if it works for you, do it. This is what works very well for us, and I believe you can't improve on the Garden of Eden diet. So it's very much there's personal choice there and there's what works for the body.
And you just have to feel the body and listen to the body and ask the body if this is working for you. And your body is so incredibly clever that if something isn't working, it'll just go, no, don't, stop that,
you
stop
know,
that
it,
now.
It will, but that's probably the hardest thing that I have to do is to encourage people to listen. So I will say in a meeting, have you ever been to a doctor that won't listen to you? Well, there's hearty nods everywhere. And then I say, don't be that doctor. And then there's total silence. Because we are guilty of not listening. If the body speaks, we must listen.
That is so profound, Barbara. That really is. And it's very hard because, you know, if you're listening to your body, you know, kind of, if you're eating gluten and we'll talk about gluten later, but if you're eating gluten and you're feeling bloated and your tummy hurts afterwards, but you've just had that beautiful warm baguette out of the oven with a great big dollop of runny old brie on it, and you're going, well, I'm not giving that up. It's very hard to listen to the body, but you get to a point, or I got to a point, and I'm sure most of your patients get to a point where you just have to go, is it worth feeling like this? And then you have to stand up for your health and go, okay, I've got to do something now because I don't want to feel like this. I don't feel well. And that's presumably when a lot of people come to you and discover your work.
Yes, yes, I think so. And I also think that our retreat is a wonderful opportunity to try it out. And we serve the most magnificent food. And so they taste it, they experience it, they feel it. We say what we do to you in a week would take you 6 months on a good diet. So we really zoom it up. And as my husband says to them, so it's a real bargain.
And that, I think, is the key for me. I had to go on retreat to actually start the process because I didn't have the strength to do it on my own. I tried and I got, you know, part way. But that actual kick in of the fasting and the juicing and, you know, the turmeric and wheatgrass shots and everything, I needed help to go forward doing that. Is there any other time in that hearing? I am going to come back to that hearing. Any other time that you thought, I don't stand a chance here?
I pretty much felt that we didn't stand a chance the whole way through.
From the beginning?
Yes. I hoped it might be different, but I know the mechanisms of these bureaucracies. I know where they were going, but I didn't feel hopeful that they were going to knock it on the head because I'd already spoken to this lawyer, the chief lawyer. I'd also spoken to lawyers that are retired who worked for the ACCC. And they were all very pessimistic. They said that once you are in their sights, it's almost impossible that they're going to drop this. They're out for a kill.
Yeah.
You're there. They're in their sights, and evidence, whatever, irrelevant. You know, if they let you go, it's seen a bit of a failure to them, and who knows what drives them behind the scenes.
Yeah.
But it would be a little bit of a badge for them to find us guilty. So, yeah, I had no expectations.
And so when did you know that you would have to leave your beloved Australia, your Misty Mountains, your beautiful, beautiful retreat that had been your life's work? When did you know that?
It was July and I was in Fiji giving meetings at the time and I got the email And I remember it well because I was in a little hut and I got the email and I just cried. I cried and cried. I cried for about 10 minutes because all I've ever wanted to do was to help. And it's so unfair. It was so unjust. And then I finished crying. I dried my eyes and I thought, well, that's enough. I wonder what God's got planned for me now, because I know that nothing happens without God not always agreeing with it, but God sees the end from the beginning. And it was probably 2021. I was in Germany at a conference and a lady came up and said, Barbara, I'm sorry to say this, but we are so glad you were banned, because now you are free to come to us. And, you know, it was a light bulb moment for me. I thought, the ban has freed me.
It absolutely has. And you now are a global sensation that we are so blessed. You know, I'm from the UK and I feel so blessed that you have come in to my life, even though it was just, you know, today it's in person, but, you know, on the screen and validated many of the beliefs that I have had. But I've heard you talk about that email and you've just said there that you cried, but you actually sobbed, didn't you? And I've heard you say that there was this moment of grief.
There was a moment of grief because, you know, it's interesting how I first started. I would never have done what I did without Michael, because I was very happy to just be in the background and help a mother here or there. And a year after we were married, Michael wanted to start his own health retreat. And we had the children. Our daughter Julia was 15. She was the cook. She was a proficient cook. Jessica was 17. She'd done a massage course. The boys were the gardeners. Michael's daughter was his secretary at 11 or 12. And I said, who'll be the health director? He said, you. I said, no, I'm just a mother. He said, you'll be good. And he walked out of the room. So that was it. I was the health director.
You were health director.
So I was really the reluctant health director. But I also know that whatever God calls you to do, he will enable you to do it. And I was so glad that the first health retreat, there was one guest. I could handle that. But I was so shy that when more started coming, Michael would start the lecture and then he'd interview me. And then as he got me talking, he'd slip out of the room.
Oh, amazing. Amazing. As I said, you know, very much the man behind Barbara O'Neill, the sensation. Barbara, I have to ask you, because I couldn't interview you about you, how does it feel being a complete internet sensation? I mean, you are more viral than COVID. How does that feel when you know that millions and millions of people are seeing your work now and you don't share it, do you?
No, I don't know how I feel, because I don't think I can comprehend it. So last night when I spoke to nearly 500 people and there was a standing ovation, that overwhelms me. I just think, don't do that. I guess I can't comprehend it. I just like to do little bits at a time. And see, every book I signed, I look into their eyes and say, what's your name? This is a person. And they kept saying, Barbara, you've got to wire up, but there are a few more. I can't walk away from them.
I've got a book that wants signing, Barbara. But I'm going to talk about your lecture last night. I flew from the UK to see you speak. And it was one of those things. I didn't even have a passport, but I bought the ticket straight away and thought, I will deal with everything else later. But I have seen many, many health lectures in my 10 years healing journey. I mean, hundreds, thousands. And I've seen many, many standing ovations at the end. What I have never witnessed before is a standing ovation as you entered the room at the beginning. And everybody just leapt to their feet. And I've never seen that before. And I just want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart for absolutely everything you do for humanity. And, you know, this has been a challenge. And I have a final question that I'd like to ask you, because we know how much money is in the pharmaceutical industry. We know what's at stake. as I said, you know, you're more deadly than a virus for these companies. Do you ever worry about your security and that of your family? Do you have any fears on that level?
I don't at all. In fact, it never even enters my mind. And they were worried about me when I was in Cork, and they said, "How did you sleep last night?" I said, "Oh, 9 hours." It actually doesn't even come into my mind, because I know that if God has a purpose for me, no man can touch me. I'm not presumptuous, but I'm doing God's work here. See, Michael and I have a beautiful property, and it will be so easy for us just to be there, and me just make full circle skirts for my granddaughters and garden. But we both feel indignant as to what's happening on the planet. We both feel for the people who are sick through ignorance, and we both feel that while we have breath, we will do this. And so if God's got a plan for us, no man can stop me. And if God says to me, "Barbara, tomorrow you must go," I'd say, "Oh, thank you, Father. Time to rest." So I have no fear of it at all.
I think the greatest thing that I discovered in my healing journey is that when you have, when you lose your fear of living, you lose your fear of death, don't
you? That's true. Mm-hmm. That is true.
And fear, as we know, is the biggest suppressor of the immune system. And it's incredibly liberating.
It is.
Lose that fear.
And I would try and tell my friends, there's no need to worry. There's no need to worry. And I read beautiful stories in the Bible of Daniel being thrown into the lion's den. And in the morning, the king came and said, "Daniel, is your God whom you serve able to deliver you from the lions?" And Daniel answered, "O king, live forever. My God has sent his angels and has shut the lions' mouths, and they have not hurt me." You see, what an amazing God I serve.
I don't know, do you call God he or she? I've got to ask that question.
I call him he.
You do?
Because Jesus came to show us what God is like, and he was a he. I guess we don't totally know, but I just use the Bible as my guide. I read the Bible every day, and I love God very much, and Michael and I, when we married, we both were committed to go wherever God asks us to go.
And the Bible states absolutely everything that we need to do for our health, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. I say to the people, this is the best medical book that we have. And 2 nights ago, I was asked to speak in a church, and I was asked to speak on God's hand in health. And I quoted a lot of Bible verses in that presentation. And my grandmother, she died at 99. She was my inspiration to memorize. She memorized great portions of scripture. And so I have memorized quite a lot. And what I love about it takes a lot of work to do it. It's like learning a musical instrument or a new language. You have to go over it and over.
Or the complete works of Shakespeare.
So I love always when I speak, I ask God, please give me the words. There's a verse that says that utterance may be given me, that I may open my mouth boldly to proclaim the mysteries of the gospel, the mysteries of the gospel of the mind, of health. And that is my prayer. And when someone says, "Barbara, that was an amazing talk," I say, "Thank you, Father. Thank you, Father," because I do not believe I've got the gift of the gab. I think my husband has more than me, but I've memorized a lot and I've done this a lot, and I let God bring the words into my mouth. And sometimes when I'm speaking, what comes into my mind, I think, I wasn't planning to do that, but then I realize, Barbara, you ask God to help you. So whatever comes into my mind, I weave it through, and when I do that, it works well.
And I know you have a new book coming out. Do you have a published date yet? Can you tell us anything about it?
Oh, we'd love to have a published date. But our graphic designer is he's making a very beautiful book, and he's up to chapter 10, and I think he's about two-thirds through it. And it's called Sustain Me, which are the acronym that I've given to those laws of health. And we're hoping it'll be out before the end of the year.
That would be absolutely wonderful. I've seen your lecture on Sustain Me. And in the next episode of The Wellness Way, I am going to talk to Barbara about this amazing acronym, which can change your life, really. Michael, before we go, please tell me where people can find you, what they can do to support your work. Will you ever go back to Australia with your political party?
Most definitely. I've only just come over here to join Barbara for just a short time, because we're very busy in Australia with the political party. There's always something to do. We've got thousands of good solid members. We have candidates, and we have problems in the country. So as the leader of the party, of course, I need to be there. So this is just a little vacation. I'm not banned in Australia because there's nothing they can get me for. They have tried.
Absolutely have.
Yes, and there's, I won't even start with some of the most obscene and absurd ways they've tried to stop us. But nevertheless, we're still here. We wake up every day and we go forward. But at the moment, I'm just here visiting my dear wife. And
there's something very exciting in a few days. It's our 26th wedding anniversary.
Yes. Congratulations. On Monday, 2nd of October.
Oh, congratulations. So this episode won't be out till after that, but I just hope you have an amazing day. And I just want to say to both of you, not just thank you for coming on the podcast today, but thank you for standing up in the world and for the hope and the knowledge that you give people. I, for one, will be eternally grateful to everything you do. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Mm-hmm. Pleasure.
It's our pleasure.